Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile.
With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
The following is a presentation of the Four Center podcast feed.
From the center of the galaxy, this is the Force Center podcast feed. I'm Cat Knapsack for another edition of the News and Cues. And with me is this guy,
Joseph Scrimshaw, the person that I am. It's Monday morning.
We're having one of those days. we're not going to start over. The Force has willed it this way, has willed it to be. I'm back from vacation. We got a lot of business talk. I even thought this is an episode that Joseph leads. No, this is the News and Cues, which I kind of take us through the beginning of it here. But we're happy to be here. It's been a wonderful time. And Joseph, this is our first episode recorded post the successful switch to Acast. We had a bunch of episodes taped and banked. And this is the first in a new era.
Yeah, this is great. We are getting back to normal. We are just launching into the normal with a slight stumble, but then we're going to hit our stride.
I'm not normal yet. You know why? Because I was at a hotel sleeping in for 2 days, and that's a good living. And then you get back to recording and work. We are going to get into news, the good news, the tough news. We're going to get into some some cues that are, wow, we got a deep one coming today that we're going to put our Star Wars thinking caps on, which includes our hearts on our sleeves. Before we get to all that, we want to remind you today's podcast is brought to you by Audible. Get a free audiobook download and a 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/4center. Over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. A little bit later, as always, we'll have our 4center recommends an audiobook we think you should try out on us. But that is not all, right, Joseph?
No, we have another offer. It is from Inside Editions. They are a publisher of a ton of great Star Wars and other pop culture books. They are offering 35% off across their website if you use this special link, insideeditions.com/discount/FC35. There are so many wonderful Star Wars holiday gifts you could get for others or for yourself. But this week we are recommending the Inside Editions book, Inner Jedi Journal. Ken and I both have a copy. We have flipped through it. It is great for the new year because it has just a little stories, reminders of challenges that specific Jedi went through, and then kind of offers you to put yourself in their Jedi robes, and that lots of places where you can kind of write down your intention to be kind for the week.
Yes.
It's really, really beautiful and quite challenging. So I am looking forward to being challenged by Inner Jedi Journal. If you also want to be delighted and challenged, you can use the link insideeditions.com/discount/FC35.
Use it, my friends. It's a great book. Challenging indeed. It's challenging to live your life like a Jedi, which is...
It is.
Yeah, kind of the point, right? Kind of.
Yeah, it's so hard to stay on the path. That's what this book should have been called. It's hard to stay on the path.
That's a great Springsteen song too. All right. Before we get into the big stuff, the news, we always like to catch up and talk about life adventures. Busy holiday season for both of us and all of you out there listening. So number one, we're so thankful you're here to hang out with us. But Joseph, how's life in Star Wars Adventures going?
Good. It was a very fun weekend. I went to Descanso Gardens Enchanted Forest of Light. If you're in the Los Angeles area, if you live around here, or you're visiting, Descanso Gardens is a beautiful public park, a zoo for plants. They got it all. So it's always beautiful year round. But in December, they do this wonderful Enchanted Forest of Lights where they put lights up. And when my wife first told me about this a couple years ago, I was like, oh, you know, holidays. I get it. They put some lights on the trees. No, it is a magical, mystical forest experience. It's all these art installations, light everywhere. Got speakers hidden in the woods, so there's just kind of weird sounds coming from who knows where, the speaker. But you feel like, where is that coming from? It's a great experience in general. Makes me think of a ton of different pop culture things that I love, but there's this one section of Descanso Gardens called the Ancient Forest, mm-hmm. and that it reminds me of Twin Peaks and Ewoks at the same time. And man, just weird mystical lights. That looks like the Ewoks are like having some sort of just a magical rite in the middle of the woods, and it's great. So we did that. If you're, like I said, if you're in the area, check it out. But then the other Star Wars adventure I had, and, you know, I guess life adventure, is on Friday of this week, I got my booster shot, and that all went well. Drank some water, hydrated, relaxed, is great. But it was interesting to watch the cultural experience of, you know, the booster shot was in, you know, a much smaller space than I got my initial vaccinations. It was at the hospital medical place I go to in a relatively small room, and they had a bunch of signs up about where to take selfies, and, you know, not to include the nurses in the selfies if they don't want to be, you know, don't take a selfie of your vaccination card with all your personal information on it, you know, standard things like that. But in this, the little wait 15 minutes to make sure you don't have a horrible adverse reaction, there's a gentleman sitting in front of me with many tattoos. And I noticed that he had a couple Star Wars ones because he had what looked like just, I would imagine, an impressively painful application of the Republic/Imperial insignia directly on his elbow.
Ooh, yeah.
Very impressive. And all red, too.
Oh, man.
So it was very, very festive. But then, on his shoulder, he had, like, what I think of from the growing up the original trilogy perspective of like the cool big three. It was like Vader, a stormtrooper and Boba Fett. It was like so old, cool. Like these are the original characters who just look cool in Star Wars. But it was so great knowing that Book of Boba Fett is around the corner, seeing that, you know, Boba Fett love right there on another human's flesh. I was in a good mood for getting the boost. And as I was walking out, I just I had heard him talking and being friendly to people. So I understood he was probably kind of a gregarious person who wouldn't mind being talked to. So on the way out, I was just like, hey, I love your Star Wars tattoo. And he was like, yeah, right on. It was just a nice moment of Star Wars positivity out in the world.
Love that. Yeah, and you know, there's always that weird moment. You're like, oh boy, is this going to be one of those conversations about what Star Wars is better? And other times, no. And that's where you just go with, you go with the leap of faith there. You let the force guide you.
Exactly, exactly. And all I did is I said I liked it. I did not elicit any like, so Book of Boba Fett, the sequel trilogy, what do you think? Like, it was just a compliment between strangers, and it was received, and that was it. And that's fine.
That's great. That's great. Yeah. Well, yeah, glad you survived your boost. I got boosted last week too, and yeah, we are boosted and ready to mingle. Not really. Slowly.
Exactly. That's a dating site, right? Yes. Both of us have partners, so we don't need to be on boost mingle, thankfully. But what are your adventures, Ken?
So I did get out of town. Grace and I headed up to my hometown area of Rio Grande Pismo Beach. And my folks still live up there, but, you know, they have three little dogs, and I love little dogs. We have our Chihuahua Baxter. He was traveling with us. But they have three dogs, two cats, a stray cat that shows up and attacks the other cats in the middle of the night. My dad has built an entire cat cage that goes around the entire one side of the house on the outside. So the cats can go all around safely in a cage, and it's great because I love animals. It's also very loud. So this is the first time I said, you know what, there's a new hotel down the street, great little place called the Arroyo Grande Village. It's like you're, I don't know, walking into an episode of Gilmore Girls, right? Like Stars Hollow is just this one stretch of old timey shops and delis and restaurants. And, so there was a hotel. So we stayed there. So you've traveled with me, Joseph, you've gone to Star Wars Celebration with me. We've shared a hotel room. When I get in, what's one of the first things I do? I turn on the TV. And just turn it on. And sure enough, turn on TNT is in the middle of one of their Star Wars marathons, right?
Nice.
So, you know, we talk Star Wars every day, every week. You and I watch so many things and we research, make notes. We've talked often about, we're still fans. And we can talk about Star Wars for 4 hours today, and I'll probably still put on Rogue One tonight, you know? And check in. And Grace loves Star Wars too. And we thought, oh, cool, we'll just keep this on. We never turned it off other than when we left the house, or left the hotel room. It was always on from Friday to Sunday when we checked out. Just kept turning TNT on and just watching Star Wars films.
What was on when you turned on?
New Hope was on when we got there.
Nice.
And then the running order was really weird on depending on, there was two TNTs up. I imagine one might have been an East Coast feed or whatever. One seemed to be running in order. Because 4 would lead to 5, and 6, we watched Return of the Jedi a few times. I saw the throne room scene about 4 times this weekend. And then Force Awakens would start. But the other channel, it was Return of the Jedi, then it went into, like, Revenge of the Sith, then popped back to, like, Rogue One. Solo was up. I mean, it was like, you talk about the machete order. It was the, you know, the pocket knife order. It just was all over the place.
It was like just Star Wars, the chaos order.
Yeah, which was all equally as fun. But, you know, and I know I'm not alone because on the way home, driving home Sunday, get caught in some of that Ventura Beach traffic, you know well. And Billy Patterson, Screen Junkies fandom producer, our friend, texts me and he goes, you know, I own every Star Wars movie on 4K and I have Disney Plus. I've been watching the TNT marathon all weekend long. It's funny. I am right there with you. Did the same thing up in my hotel. So it's just fun reminder when Star Wars is on, most of us will stop.
Yeah, I love that, just that weird cultural thing that now that we do have almost everything on demand, then we are coming to reappreciate that special sensation of like, it's on. Mm-hmm. I didn't plan this. I didn't make it happen. The universe offered this to me. And so even though I could watch it any other way, I'd stop and watch it. And I love that for you, like Star Wars can almost just be like a meditation app just running in the background.
Yeah, right.
Not that you don't like sit down and watch it and really engage, but that it's also this thing that can just be like, ah, it, the Emperor is threatening Luke pleasantly in the background.
Yeah. No, it's great. No, it's, yeah, you're absolutely right. It's that feeling of, oh my gosh, Star Wars is on. And then it was kind of fun to see where the commercial breaks are. My favorite one was in the middle of the Obi-Wan Hut of Exposition in New Hope.
Really? They interrupted Obi-Wan.
They take a break and it's like, it fades back in and Luke is like, no. My father was a navigator and a spice freighter. That's the break point.
Oh, wow. I thought you meant it broke in the middle, which, so I was imagining like Luke saying like, how did my father die? And Obi-Wan does that look. And then it cuts to commercial.
So that was a lot of fun. And then at one point there was the moment where I was trying to make a thumbnail for our YouTube channel there. And now that we can put all episodes easily up on YouTube, thanks to Acast. So I was watching Star Wars. I think it was Rogue One on TNT, but I had Rise of Skywalker on Disney Plus on my MacBook at the same time. And it's just like, yeah, this is the life. This is it. This is the life.
This is what you got to do. This is what people do with some episodes of Twin Peaks, particularly the third season. You got to watch them all at the same time, overlapping to see if there are any secret clues.
There you go.
I guess that does happen with The Ring Theory. Anyway, that's another episode.
Anyway, that was my Star Wars and life adventures. Great to get away and great to take Star Wars with me.
Yeah, I'm glad you had some fun Star Wars in the hotel room action.
Yeah. Indeed, indeed. So now let's get into some Star Wars news. This is got a lot to talk about here.
Yeah.
Because we were doing some episodes that were banked. We're playing a little catch up with some news that came out last week. And we're going to start with this story here about the Acolyte. It's the first cast member been revealed. So this was first reported by the Illuminati, which is like a website, but it could also just be a governing party in the nerd world. Who knows? And Amandla Stenberg may be in talks to join the cast. We say may because Stenberg's reps and Lucasfilm have yet to comment. They first made a big mark as Rue in the Hunger Games. That's where I remember them because I'm a Hunger Games fan of the books, the movies, sometimes hit or miss. I do like the movie. And Rue's death made me cry in the theater, wept openly. So I've been watching their work for a long time. And Stenberg went on to films like The Hate U Give and Dear Evan Hansen. A very robust resume right now. So looks like they're joining the cast, but we still know next to nothing about the Acolyte. But we want to talk about this, Joseph, because we're excited about this possibility and we're excited about this mystery theory. So thoughts on the casting?
Yeah, I think for me, it's sometimes my thoughts on the casting are really about how much I know about the actor. And sometimes it's this thrill because like, oh, I know them from something. And then other times where it's a performer like Amandla Stenberg that I don't know as much about. I have this kind of thrill of, hey, I like it when Star Wars introduces me to actors that I like might then, you know, get really excited about. I'm getting ready to watch Spider-Man No Way Home this weekend. So I rewatched Amazing Spider-Man 2 and I was like, hey, it's Jyn Erso. You know,
right. Yeah.
It's a reality of Star Wars fans. Like Jyn Erso is the Black Cat. So that's always thrilling for me. The only performance that I'm familiar with is Rue. And yes, that I have never read those books. I saw that movie. I didn't know that was going to happen. Spoilers for Hunger Games. And I feel like there was a brief moment of a national tragedy as everyone processed the events of Rue. I thought they were great as Rue. I have not seen a lot of their more recent credits.
Yeah.
But what's intriguing to me about this is a lot of their credits are heavy and serious, right? Like dramatic, right? And obviously I'm sure within those plenty of moments of levity and all that kind of thing. But it's really interesting for me to think about, you know, the Acolyte, which rumors and whispers and the little bit we have about it are talking about it potentially focusing on people dabbling with the dark side. The Acolyte title certainly lends itself to that. So the idea of somebody like Amandla Stenberg, who certainly has a cred playing heavy, serious, that's really intriguing for like, how might that be combined with a story about the dark side?
Yeah, that's a great point. We always do like to look at past credits, maybe dictating what's coming. Not that a great performer can't do all kinds of things, but there's definitely wheelhouses, and sometimes you kind of get get put into those same type of programs. But I think we're very confident with Leslie Headland and her love of all things Star Wars. That mm-hmm. Can the Acolyte make me laugh? It's a question I'm going to ask myself more and more, and I got to imagine it's there. And someone like Amanda Stenberg, showing on up and just like you said, being introduced to us Star Wars fans. I'm just wide open to all the possibilities. And it's really, I just don't know. Right. We just don't know. And that's still what's intriguing me most about the Acolyte. We don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. And with everything that Leslie Headland has said, I agree with you. She seems like such a fan of Star Wars, such a student of Star Wars. I think very aware of all of the different ingredients that you can put in a Star Wars movie, and you can focus on one and you know, downplay another a little bit. We've seen that, I think, in sequel trilogy movies where, you know, I think Last Jedi's got some great action scenes, but less concerned about being adventure serial, and Rise of Skywalker really wants to be a pulpy adventure serial. To me, it's not good or bad. It's just about dialing up those ingredients. Yeah. And what I'm really curious about with the Acolyte, thinking about it from that perspective, is Leslie Headland, obviously, some of her work has just like great comedy. So I do think there will be comedy, humanity, hope. But then the thought of somebody like Leslie Headland turning up the dial on the grim, right? Some of the kind of Star Wars that has been popularized in books or video games where people do get into the dark side and pathos. And we're going to talk about this potential video game coming out. And that trailer has got a lot of that, like, there isn't a lot of the levity of Star Wars. It's a lot of like everything is big and important and scary. And the idea that Leslie Headland might take the Acolyte in that direction is intriguing to me.
Yeah, yeah, right. And then, you know, she also wrote and directed an indie that I'm a fan of, Sleeping with Other People from 2015. I'm also ready for an Acolyte rom-com.
Yep. Who knows? Who knows? Yeah, I'm just kind of spitballing off of the casting. But yeah, I'm very intrigued. Well, maybe it'll be very grimdark humor.
Yes. Acolyte grims. Acolyte's grim. So anyways, we're Star Wars fans. We're very happy to have Amanda Stenberg in the Star Wars family. Maybe we'll wait for official comment. But it was, as I said, first reported by Illuminati, but then by the time it gets to places like Deadline and Variety, that does add a little bit of the cred that is sometimes needed in talking about these stories. So, we're very happy to have them in Star Wars. We'll update you when we get more information on this wonderful, wonderful potential casting.
Yeah.
All right, we are, I don't know if you've heard this, Joseph, the Book of Boba Fett's coming out real close, real close. And anywhere you look, TV spots are dropping. In fact, while you're getting ready to record and handling some behind-the-scenes business, more trailers may drop or TV spots. So we initially were just going to be talking about the return spot, but along the way we got the ready TV spot, which is about 30 seconds. The return spot is about a minute. That's one I spent a little bit more time with here. It is, like I said, called the Return, and it is the moodiest one yet. It uses seismic charges and a swelling score. Just the, you know, it reminds me of Nolan's Inception has that famous bong in the trailer that everyone copies. The seismic charges are now that.
It feels like a reclaiming of the bong. Starting with Interstellar, it started appearing everywhere. The bong. Yeah. And I think starting with Force Awakens, you had its opposing number, the light ding.
It's so true.
But it seems like they're reclaiming, like, hey, you like that bong? I liked it in 2002 when it was called the Seismic Charges.
It's great. So it got me in right away. Right away. That's my favorite sound in Star Wars. So I was excited. This trailer highlights perhaps more of more flashbacks or origin footage. We'll talk about that. Pit droids in distress. And perhaps two classic Star Wars characters left on the cutting room floor in 1977. Could they be back? So let's dive into this one first here, Joseph. What do you think about all this? And let's get right to that headline. Is that Fixer and Cammy?
Do you want to start there?
Sure, why not? Let's not bury the lead, huh?
Yeah, yeah. So I revisited the, if anybody doesn't know what we're talking about, there's a shot in the return spot where Boba Fett walks into a doorway, and then there is some lights and some little cubby holes for alcohol and other objects. Mm-hmm. And that wall matches the cutscene from A New Hope where Luke Skywalker enters what is actually Tashi Station.
Right.
So there's the possibility that Tashi Station is going to co-star in the Book of Boba Fett. In the way the trailers cut together, they can be cut together deceptively. Yeah. You know, it looks like Boba Fett is entering a space, but then we cut to this shot of some, I believe, Nikto ruffians roughing up some people that may be in that space. And if there's people in the space of Tashi Station, it's got to be Fixer and Cammy.
Got to be.
From the deleted scenes, from the novelization, from the NPR radio broadcast version of Star Wars back in the day. Fans know these characters from lots of things, even though they were never in the film.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. So here's my thing. I'm a maybe on the Fixer and Cammy. I think that's a possibility. I think that's absolutely Tashi Station, because why wouldn't you?
Yes, and why? I mean, look, what's the percentage of Fennec or Boba Fett saying, well, we need to go to Tashi Station to pick up some power converters? I mean, let's just do it. Let's just do it. I have no problem with that. I like that. And as far as the Fixer Cammy thing, I wouldn't have, on a quick view, and I wouldn't have maybe stopped to pick that out, but a shout out to our pal Alex Damon. I was watching his video, he was all in on that idea too. Same thing, just like, it's a strong match. And so that's where I'm going to come down on that one. It's a strong match to the classic photos and even figures that were released of Fixer and Cammy. But that aside, because what are we looking at? It's about 10 years from where Luke would have been there with them?
Yeah, if it's 5 years. Yeah, yeah, in that ballpark.
You know, I still go to some of the same bars, you know?
Well, I think that's a pretty clear depiction of life on Tatooine, is you get out or you don't.
Right. They're dressed the same. I mean, I can't imagine there's a lot of fashion changeover on Tatooine.
Yeah, I mean, if it is Fixer and Cammy, right, that can just be an absolutely subtle deep dive for fans and for every pop culture website to write an article explaining it. I think if it is Fixer and Cammy, it will be that subtle. But I mean, they obviously also could be like, can't believe what became that Luke Skywalker.
Sorry, I'm not laughing like I'm laughing at this show or laughing down at it. I'm actually giddy as a Star Wars fan. It will never be too on the nose. I just trusted they wouldn't do that. But just to have. Yeah, maybe they're talking about it, or maybe Boba Fett's like, I ran into some guy, some kid named Luke. We fought at Obi-Wan's hut. Did you read that comic? Because that happened. And they're like, what happened to Luke? What happened to Biggs? I don't know. I don't know who that is.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if there's like a little memorial station set up in Tashi Station to Biggs. I mean, that would be the worst dig against Luke. Like, yeah, I guess he went off and he's some legend. He's those ancient Jedi Knights. I guess he is one. And I guess he helped save the galaxy. And there's rumors that he defeated the Emperor and turned Darth Vader. I don't know. There's some myths going around. What we really know is Biggs was great.
Yeah.
I guess Wormy's a Jedi Knight.
Yeah, Wormy's a Jedi Knight. And here's our Biggs display in the corner. It's like the large Marge in Pee-wee's Big Adventure. Just like tonight.
I want that just for myself, but I also want that, of course, for our wonderful friend Alex Damon, who is way high up in the Biggs fan club.
Yeah. Yeah, top of the food chain there as well. I'm excited. Yeah, as far as your breakdown of Tashi Station thing, that does make a lot of sense. It really does, and I don't mind playing around that world.
No, I mean, I have two thoughts about it. It is obviously that name of Tashi Station is known because of Luke's, in my opinion, great line delivery of a teen who does not want to do his chores and is frustrated. The wine is great by me, but it's also well known even by people who are not hardcore Star Wars fans because people poke fun at the delivery, right?
Right.
So Tashi Station kind of has this larger than life vibe because of our reading of that line. But if you're going to tell the story of the real world of Tatooine and you know, Boba Fett is at whatever point in his journey he is, he doesn't have his armor. When he's walking in, it doesn't look like things are going great for him. It makes sense to have, if this is, it's on the outskirts of Anchorhead, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he's trying to find his way back into civilization. It's a perfectly logical place for him to show up, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's not that big of a deal for me. Like, it's like, hey, if it's a, you know, a movie set in the 90s and somebody gets left in a field and they wander into Radio Shack on the edge of town, you know, it's just an established place in the continuity.
Yeah, yeah. And this debate that always rears its, I think, ugly head of nostalgia or too much nostalgia. I think this is, you know, this is like the Ponda Baba, Dr. Evanson, and Rogue One thing for me, where it's like, yeah, that's fun. It didn't need to be there. It didn't add anything to the story, but it was fun because I'm a Star Wars fan and that's fun. So if it is kind of a call out, if it is a little small part in the return of Boba Fett, great. That's what all that stuff is there for. That's why we have Wikipedia, to have fun things show up in films.
And I would... My prediction is to brace for impact on the nostalgia debate, because so far from what we've seen from the Book of Boba Fett, it seems like there is a real deep desire to explore all these little fun ideas in Star Wars, right? Characters, locations. The whole thing to me feels like we often talk about Star Wars being kind of tip of the iceberg storytelling. And this feels like, we are going to show you so much more of the iceberg of everything related to Boba Fett, to Jabba's palace, to Tatooine. We're going all in, right? This particular teaser return also has that hangar, right?
Yes.
You've played the video game that it's from. It's located exactly where it is in a video game, right?
It totally is. Absolutely is. In Battlefront, yeah.
Yeah, so there's just already been a lot of things, including what I keep going on about, that idea of, in the very first teaser, the Boimar monk not being in the dark in the shadows, but up front in the foreground. And it's just, I feel like that's a mission statement of the people who are making this, of like, if you like this world, the palace, Boba Fett, Tatooine, we are taking everything that was in the background that you wondered about and we're putting it in the foreground. That's what we are doing.
Yeah.
So I think the nostalgia debate is the nostalgia wars are coming.
They are. And I think we kind of both feel that first trailer, the Boimar monk, and over that we hear Boba Fett saying, "I'm not a bounty hunter," means they're taking some of that nostalgia, throwing it out the window, using all those elements, all those pieces, things we're familiar with, things we love, to tell a new story of Boba Fett. What more could you want as a fan?
That is a very good point, and I think probably something we'll end up talking about is, it seems like in terms of the story, the ideas, the themes, the characters, there's a ton of evolution and new and moving forward, and a lot of the set dressing is going to be the nostalgia.
Yeah, absolutely. So that's the return. Today was the 30-second spot called Ready. I will admit I only took about one 30-second swing through it there. It features Fennec Shand heavily. A lot of stuff that kind of makes you think of, look, hey, Boba Fett, you're trying to do something, but we got to get ready. We might have a bit of a bounty hunter war coming. Joseph, did you spend some time with this trailer?
Yeah, I was watching it very quickly, and the things I love about it are some things that we've speculated on, that I think a lot of fans have speculated on, kind of being confirmed, right? Because we get that voiceover that we've heard before from Boba himself saying, "Jabba ruled with fear, I want to rule with respect." And then we get that little pushback from Fennec. She says, "In difficult times, fear is a sure bet." So that's a kind of great confirmation of the relationship that we might have, that that Boba and Fennec have made this bond. Fennec owes Boba for saving her life. They both relate to being left for dead on the sands of Tatooine. So they've got a bond. They're not going to be broken. But it also feels like Boba being like, you know what? Not only can I take over the entire this entire crime organization, I can change the game. And Fennec being a little bit of the realist or the cynic going, yeah, you know, the old ways work okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, yeah. And what I like about overall, other than just, you know, we got some Fennec and I think you and I really love that character and ready to explore more of that character and really spend some quality time with Fennec Shand. But just the what you're saying, it gets me excited. So far we've seen, hey, I'm Boba Fett. I'm not a bounty hunter anymore. I'm going to try to run this thing. I try to use respect. And of course, problems are going to ensue. And I take this one as boring. There's some fighting to come in. And I think almost as if Boba Fett, I envision just a little bit of Boba Fett going, look, I tried, but I also love violence. So here we are.
Well, it really feels like I have three options for you. The first is respect. The second is one more chance at respect. The third is fear, violence, and knee darts to the face. That feels like what's at stake.
Yeah, yeah. And we have a new gift shop in Jabba's Palace run by Fixer and Cammy, my new friends.
Yeah, Tashi Station is now been converted into a Luke Skywalker Biggs Darklighter Museum. It's going to be great. Absolutely great. And I do love just kind of the plot mechanics. Like we've seen chases, fights with what appear to be whatever that rival group is, right? So hearing Fennec say like, they're not going to stop, there's going to be war. That gives our first concrete clue to the actual plot. Yeah. Like the literal what happens here that then leads to this, you know, of Boba Fett trying to stake his claim. Somebody's already pushing back. He's got his philosophy and it's already being challenged.
Yeah. And there, like I said, the fun starts, the problems ensue. We got ourselves some conflict and a series.
Yeah. And the last thing I want to shout out on this one, Ken, is this has appeared in lots of different little spots. The different shots of Boba putting on the armor, but he's being helped by what appears to be a little droid valet.
Yeah.
Like he's in Downton Abbey, but he's got a droid butler and his nice dinner suit is Mandalorian Beskar armor. I am so excited to learn more about that little droid valet.
See, I go to Two Towers where King Theoden's getting ready for the Battle of Helm's Deep. And is it Gimli, similar name to Gimli, dressing him. And this is the, what have we done speech? You know, why has it come to war? Maybe Boba Fett has a great speech like that, too.
So. Oh, I hope so.
Yeah. All right, Book of Boba Fett coming very soon. We're not done. In fact, we are going to give our big thoughts, our hopes, and our wildest predictions and dreams for Boba Fett in a deep dive coming to you before the series here on Force Center. All right, before we get out of here, we got a big news story to discuss. And man, we wish this was just all fun and literal games. But hey, that's not the way it always works and not the way Star Wars always works. The Gamer Awards were last Thursday. And one of the big surprises during that event was the reveal of an epic theatrical trailer for the High Republic era game Star Wars Eclipse, a game that had been kind of rumored, kind of leaks about. Now we know it's real, or it's going to be real because it's a game called in development still and still possibly 3 to 4 years from release, according to some sources. Now, that's where this kind of all started. And I was live on a show on YouTube and I saw the trailer and man, oh, that looked just great. And Joseph, I don't know if you have discovered it in a similar way or it popped up, but no one was expecting this, right?
Yeah, I was trying to get some other work done and it popped up and it's like, well, I got to stop what I'm doing and watch this trailer. And the trailer was great. And then I saw the reactions and learned more and it was less great.
Yeah. So let's dive into that here. This game is from the Quantic Dream Studios based in Paris. I do believe they have a Montreal office, but this is the one out of Paris and it was not well received by many fans. And let's go into that and also acknowledge that many fans were hurt by this. And we at Force Center always understand that it's impossible to discuss Star Wars and why we love Star Wars and the lines. I just think a lot of stuff in Rogue One coming to my mind this week. And we just did that Star Wars rank diving into our favorite lines. And Joseph and I really celebrating everything about the fight and characters like Cassian Andor have been in the fight all their life. And Jyn Erso doesn't look up and she does look up. I think about all those lines and it makes it impossible, absolutely impossible for me to not hear the voices of a lot of people upset about what's going on. So we just want to acknowledge that first and I'll go into a little details, Joseph, what's that is about.
Yeah, exactly. So do you want to touch base on the actual trailer about what you liked and then we can get into the horror story?
Yeah. In terms of just the trailer that preceded the horror story is the music. Completely theatrical indeed. A theatrical trailer. I don't trust that for nothing for games anymore, right? Like, show me your gameplay, man. But the reveal of that, the Yoda and the Jedi Council chambers overlooking Coruscant, holy moly. I was like, okay, and it's High Republic. I immediately was like intrigued, on board, and just completely blown away by that specific shot.
Yeah, I think that was my reaction as well, including the, I think probably I'm going to slot myself into the yelling at clouds category for this, but like, where's the gameplay? I understand it's very early in development, but I still have that reaction of like, this is about the mood, the tone, the possibility of the story. And yeah, and that stuff was all great. The mood and the tone had the like, yeah, this is the more serious, epic, somber side of Star Wars. There's a ton of levity, like, you know, right. some interesting creatures in that where you could go, oh, you know, maybe there'll be a that droid might crack wise. But for the most part, that little bit of that weight and oomph that Star Wars can do. Watching it for me, I was super excited about anything in the High Republic, the idea that you could kind of be shaping the actions of a Jedi and trying to stay on the right path, that Yoda shot, mind-blowing.
Yeah.
The Trade Federation ships being very similar. I love what they're doing in High Republic era, where some things are very different and some things are not. Yeah. And then just like the shot of the two Jedi sparring or having some sort of conflict. But look at lightsabers, lightsaber fighting on a very tall, lonely bridge. Beautiful. I'm always there for a lightsaber fight on a tall, lonely bridge, right?
Yeah.
And then the stuff that was new, the drumming that then appeared to be a part of some sort of ritual to rise, to have some sort of being rise. It certainly had a vibe of being malevolent. And that was great and fun. So there was a ton that I liked about this. I want to acknowledge why people like this, why people were excited by this, because the fact that people were excited about this makes the upsetting stuff with the studio even more tragic.
Tragic is the word I was thinking of like, oh, awesome. And it's just right now it's for me personally, just It's a muted response because of what I don't follow game stuff. I don't follow a lot of the the gaming industry, which has been going through a lot of what I would hope is good upheaval that could lead to a better industry.
Mm-hmm.
We've seen that all around, and that's come up a lot. So I was completely ignorant to all this stuff going on. And here's what we got going on. The Quantic Dreams Studio is founded in part by a man with goes by the name of David Cage. His real name is David LaGratola. So that's what I'll refer to him as here. And he had his company successfully sued in 2018 for having a toxic work environment that included tolerance, I would say extreme tolerance of sexism, racism, and harassment. Now, most of this stemmed from an incident involving hundreds upon hundreds of doctored photos of employees put into compromising positions, sexual situations. One or two or more employees looked like they were in Nazi uniforms, giving salutes, all that kind of stuff. And they went around the studio. And this ended up being the case was actually kind of based mostly around, and I'm summarizing a lot of stuff, folks. Mm-hmm. You can find it out there. Essentially a wrongful dismissal case by an IT employee. But out of that case, it just shed a lot of light on the toxic culture there on that studio. And that stretches the entire existence of it there. Now, and here, I want to bring this up here only because it's out there and it's there. But in April 2021, the ruling was overturned by the Paris Court of Appeal. The plaintiff in the original case was ordered to pay damages back to Quantic Dream. Quantic Dream had said, deny this and we are going to clear our name. A lot of battles with French press over this, all those kind of things. And we'll acknowledge that. We'll talk about that and follow me here for a second, Joseph. Like, that's out there. But beyond that, that's the court case itself, from what I'm hearing out there, and there's the hashtag Blackout Star Wars Eclipse, and you can follow it and click on that and find out a lot of just great conversations by people hurt and affected by this. And we're here to stand by those folks. And it beyond just the rulings and appealings and technicalities, Cage is on record of just, this LaGratola is on record of saying some just real repulsive statements against women and the LGBTQ plus community. And some of the game action itself has come into question. Some of the tropes it's used before, domestic violence and that kind of stuff. And that's why his involvement, Grutola's heavy involvement in Star Wars Project, is that's why it's being met with anger and pain and disappointment, you know?
Yeah, yeah. And I'm with you, like, I'm kind of aware of the amount of upheaval that's going on in the general video game industry that I think matches everywhere right now, where this is it lasts several years where lots of poor behavior is being brought to light from individuals in powerful places, but also just institutionally, right? Everything from like the Yahtzee you know, debate and almost strike to get better safe conditions for people working in film. This is happening in all sorts of industries, right? And that's another part of Quantic Dream has been accused of by employees is working people to just insane, not healthy hours, crunch time in video game. You know, there's unionization things going on with other video games companies and similar allegations. So all of this stuff is a lot of this is going on, you know, in the whole industry. I was not aware of this in particular. So one thing that I did to just get the most basic information is you can go to the Wikipedia site of Quantic Dream, and it's got a great breakdown of the court cases, the initial judgment against Quantic Dream, the reversal. And then there's a separate case where Quantic Dream was engaged in a legal battle with the papers that initially the two French or more papers that initially reported some of these accusations. And that's where some of these statements that Cage allegedly made that are really reprehensible came to light. So I always go from a point of view of like if you want to educate yourself, it's great to just kind of try to go to the best sources you can and educate yourself. But I think my big emotional reaction, I guess emotional and logical, philosophical, I think for me, innocent until proven guilty is a legal standard that I absolutely believe in. But I also feel like with something like this, I'm not the French court. And I as an individual want to look at the discussion, Google what facts I can, and come to a reaction, an emotional reaction that informs my actions myself.
Yeah.
And I think for me, what I'm seeing with this, it isn't about which French court said he did or didn't do this. That does get into technicalities. It is a matter of looking at all of it and coming to a judgment for yourself. And I think for me, it leaves me not wanting to pursue this video game.
I'm with you on that too. Like I said, it kind of unfolded for me in real time Thursday. Like I said, I was live on the show. I saw the trailer. Oh, that's fun. That's great. And then Friday, some stuff started popping up. And you know, if you start scanning through, you can see some of these appeals and overturns and technicalities and go, oh, I don't know, it seems all good. But then when the voices start coming out, fans and people we know and podcasters we know and people in the community and the words that this LaGruther guy used, you know, were words that have been thrown around, you know, hurtful words to you know, minimize the lives and existence of so many people for so many years. And we're seeing that change that can't leave me. You know what I mean? That that's what I literally go to. If I, you know, it's great that I'm looking up now, but you know, Cassian's going, great, welcome to the party. It's been my whole life. And I think I'm hearing a lot of those people. Again, you go to that Blackout Star Wars Eclipse hashtag. We recommend you do it. You'll see a lot of people, you know, directly affected. And unfortunately, we as humans, sometimes we don't get involved until we're directly affected. It's one of the struggles to remain on the light side path, right? To look outside your own walls. And that's where I'm going right now. Just to stop and look and listen is an important thing right now in this conversation. Maybe some dust will settle. Maybe Lucasfilm will make a change. And I don't know how it got to this point. And I've seen some posts of, you know, some Lucasfilm employees just got to, they're in a tough job position where they got to put an article out about this game, but some are in decision-making positions. And I don't know how this decision came about. I don't know how they didn't vet it, or maybe they did and didn't care. That's where a lot of the hurt is coming from. Not even necessarily about this game, you know, but in a week where this wonderful news of, you know, possibly Amandla Stenberg joining The Acolyte, a show run by Leslie Headland and a lot of victory for diversity in Star Wars, to have that week end up with this, it's not just discouraging. It's hurtful. It's painful. And I can't separate myself from that right now.
Yeah, no, I am with you, and I understand, and I think it's always good to really try to look at everything and decide for yourself what you think is, you know, being said, and because this can be a you just see a tweet and then you want to run down and go like, okay, but where is that from?
Yeah,
all of that, and verify for yourself what you feel, and I guess what I'm saying is, from the looking into it that I've done, I definitely feel not great about supporting this company. Yeah. And wanting to support people, and as you are saying so eloquently, to take it very seriously, the pain that this causes people, you know?
Yeah.
That the kind of statements that he has allegedly made, that they really, really truly affect people's lives and take that very, very seriously, mm-hmm. is super important. And I think just at the end of the day, the day won't end. The days go on and on. But in terms of what happens next, I do think that this, it seems like from the reaction that this would impact the sales.
Yeah.
And I'm very curious to just see if how Lucasfilm responds to the fact that this is a video game that otherwise people would be, it seems like overall very excited about. I saw so many people, including, you know, some friends who are very much involved in the video game community, you know, kind of describing the the horrible roller coaster of watching the trailer going great and then seeing the name of the company and going, ooh, nope. Mm-hmm. That I think it is. I hope that negative roller coaster is taken into account.
Yeah, and I get the business of it can sometimes be hard and contracts and this and that, but you know, maybe that'll be a lesson learned. And I mean, and I've been talking with some people this weekend who just ask how could this happen in the sense of, you know, this isn't a cast member joins a show and then starts kind of becoming a problem. This isn't that. This isn't a lawsuit against a performer and the lawsuit clears and that person is clear because their life track record shows that, hey, maybe the court case ruling is lined up with who they are. But, you know, that's been something yeah. that we dealt with. This is different. This is a long standing problem. It's an industry problem and video games overall. Again, I'm ignorant to some of the bigger issues in the gaming industry, but it's like you said, Joseph, generally very much aware right now and in support of a changing environment. So I don't know. And that's why I don't know those answers and we'll see. We understand everyone out there listening who is and will continue to be hurt by this unless there is a change or just, you know, at best or maybe at worst, just ignore the game that's coming out. We understand that and respect that.
Yeah, I totally, totally agree. And heart goes out to people who are really affected by this. And I think, Ken, if this game was out tomorrow, would you buy it?
I wouldn't. I would use it as there's some other examples in my life of artists or something that I'm such a they've changed my life. They affected me and some things have happened in their life that have come to light. And I thought I'd be like, well, you know, I'll still listen to the music. Right. And every time the music comes on my iTunes shuffle, it's in my head. It doesn't hit me. And so that's just kind of my heart telling me where I am in my life. And I wasn't always there 3-4 years ago. I've been like, nah, it's a great song. You know, I've changed a little bit, grown a little bit. And that's all we can all ask of ourselves, I guess. This comes out tomorrow. It just wouldn't feel right for me. Just wouldn't feel right for me.
Yeah, I think that's where I'm at for my own personal decision. It's like, yeah, I didn't tweet about this game. We're only talking about it now in the context of, you know, wanting to discuss the reality that it's out there, both the reality of what people were engaged by in the trailer and then the reality of the letdown once they see who is actually behind it. So, yeah, I think of it. If it came out today, I would not be buying it.
Yeah, final thought for me, you know, especially in terms of like, you know, we've all heard or been around situations or people where maybe the court says one thing, but the truth is kind of and the history of that person goes beyond just that one case. And for me, I'm tired of a-holes winning.
Yeah. And I think that's for me is digging into this. You know, the initial papers that reported it had, you know, 15 sources describing a company culture that was just really unnecessarily difficult, harsh, inappropriate, all of these things that just I want to live in a more empathetic world. And there's just no reason that that people should have to work in an environment like that to create something fun and joyful like a Star Wars video game.
Yeah. And High Republic is about, you know, for light and life. And there's a lot of other High Republic content out there that will help lift that message up. And I'm okay not engaging with this one right now.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. Well, we always, you know, we're going to dive in when we need to dive in, but we also enjoy, you know, the surface stories, the happy stuff, but it's not always like that. It's not always like that. Star Wars is deeper than that, and so is the real world. So there you go. That is a look at Star Wars news. Before we take a quick break, we are going to give an audiobook for you to maybe consider trying out on us. Joseph, what is our Force Center recommends?
We are recommending the book that kicked off the High Republic Light of the Jedi by Charles Soule. We are staring down the barrel of a bunch of new High Republic books coming out. So if you want to get caught up, you can check out the great audiobook that kicked it all off, Light of the Jedi.
Download your free audiobook today by going to audibletrial.com/ForceCenter. Again, that's audibletrial.com/ForceCenter for your free audiobook. All right, on the other side of this, we are going to take a break and get to your questions here on ForceCenter.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
One size fits all seemed like a good idea for clothes. Nice
dress. It's a t-shirt.
Until you tried it on. Same goes for your healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers a variety of flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. So whether you're between jobs, coming off a parent's plan, or even missed open enrollment, you can find the plan that fits you best. Find out more about United Healthcare coverage at uh1.com. That's uh1.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Wow!
Nice!
Yeah!
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST. Code ACAST.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Welcome back to Force Center, the big show, the main show, the superstar destroyer of our fleet. We have taken a look at the news, good and bad and otherwise, but now we got some questions. Let's get to it, Jason.
Yeah, we got a couple questions from Twitter and from our patrons on Patreon. We normally have two questions from our patrons on Patreon, but I need to re-up our request for questions, which I will be doing later today. So we got two questions from Twitter and a great, deep, thorough question from a patron on Patreon. So here we go. First to Twitter. This question comes to us from the wonderful Star Wars handle, R2-D2 playing bass.
Yes.
Check out that that user pick, too. Here's what R2-D2 playing bass has to say. Given that the Mon Calamari are literally named after calamari, is there any other food you would like to see reflected in an alien species? I share Joseph's love of all things frozen pizza. So for mine, my race will be the Prozen Fizza. And they mine carbonite on the planet of Mots. Rella Prime. They are essentially a race of Ben Quadraneros looking beings with a more round face with yellow and red tones. All the best, guys, and keep up the great work. Thank you, R2-D2 playing bass. Ken, you've enjoyed a good frozen pizza or two in your life, right?
Oh, I miss them. Yes.
Oh, so you're being healthy. I bought another new one last night.
Well, you know, I'll get the cauliflower crust, but, you know, you sometimes convince yourself that it's all healthy when really just part of it is.
Yeah, no, I understand. It is. I have a long and deep love of frozen pizza, enough so much that I have mentioned it on a Star Wars podcast enough that we get listener questions reflecting this. So, Ken, you are also a connoisseur of many both fine and not so fine foods. Where do you go with this question of what kind of a food-based Star Wars characters do you have in mind?
Yeah, this is a great question. I started to go to, like, what are some of my favorite meals, and but then what would make sense to be a species in Star Wars here that would make sense, like R2-D2 playing base presented with us with. So I went with this one, the omelettes, a fowl-like species from the planet of Dynair, and they spend most of their lives defending their precious eggs from marauders looking for breakfast.
Oh, wow. Wow. That's so great. It's a great visual. And I also like that there is this tradition in Star Wars of, like, starting with Lucas, not being precious about the way things are named, right? Senator Orn Frita is how one of his children used to say corn fritters when they were a kid is the legend.
Yes.
So you're really nailing it with what was the alien? Omelettes?
The omelettes. OMELETTS. Omelettes.
The omelettes. It sounds so regal. Like that could be like Holdo's parents' first name.
Yeah. Right.
That's so great.
Fowl like, I don't have the design completely down. I know there's been some fowl like bird like species in Star Wars. I'm thinking of I forget his name, but Jim Rash's character in Resistance that comes to mind too.
But are you picturing just like we know chickens exist in Star Wars Galaxy? These just very, very big chickens?
It's I'm not saying it's not similar to Mark McKinney's chicken lady character from Kids in the Hall. I'm not saying it's not. I'm a Jedi.
That's hilarious and even more freakish.
The planet of Dynair, which is DINER, and it's just a cruel name for a planet where the species trying to protect their eggs that other people want to have for breakfast. But there you have it. And I got to think at one point there might have been a run in with Dex, but Dex did the right thing. He actually defended them from the marauders
instead of cooking them. Good.
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah.
I had two. I think R2-D2 playing bass just talking about mozzarella got me thinking about cheese sticks, which there are some places that I just I have to order cheese sticks. I've gone to a place and ordered cheese sticks as an appetizer for the cheese pizza. It's a problem at best.
Yeah.
So I was thinking of just my general love of greasy breaded things. Yeah. So I want a group called the Stick Breaders. It almost sounds kind of tough and badass, and I think they would be this a small group of alien bounty hunters, and they're outward appearance is just this mottled, bready, but also looking very hard. Like, is that armor? Is it flesh? You don't really know. And they're coming at you with actual, like, scary sticks. And you're like, you want to laugh, but you also want to run when you see the stick predators coming.
Get smacked right in the face. Right in the face. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah.
Love that.
Really hot juice might pop out of them. You don't know.
No, and I'm with you, man. Cheese sticks and pizza together at last. That's one of my favorites.
Yeah. And then the other one I had, I wanted to have some fun with just the great Star Wars thing of just taking a name and flipping it around. Mm-hmm. So I also want a mysterious creature named Otley Chip. And so I think a large creature that is just wrapped in layers of cloth that look like a tortilla and you don't know what's in there.
Yes. And they'd be perfect to show up like next to a POW or Bistan in Rogue One or something like that, or fighting with the Cloud Riders.
Otley Chip is with us too. Yeah. Any more thoughts on this one?
No, this is great. And just a reminder of, you know, as deep and dark and gritty as you want your Star Wars to be sometimes. And I want it to hit those levels always as well. You can't forget that one of the heroes is a man named Akbar from the Mon Calamari people, and he's an appetizer on the go. So
we talk about in Star Wars this great tension between the depth and the philosophy and the just weird, sometimes silly space adventure, right? I mean, the fact that good old Dave Filoni can be like, yeah, no, here's the whole history of their society and their civil war with the Quarren and the the history of the line of royalty and, also their fish.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's Star Wars for you. We're going to move on to a great question from Commander Cloud. Commander says, briefing time once again. I think almost every film has one, either in a war room or in a hangar or out in a pleasant grove on Naboo. So what's your favorite briefing scene?
Yeah.
I think mine is in episode 9. It's got the music ramping up and everyone scrambling to their ships. And also, when in your life will you want a Star Wars-style briefing? Who's giving it and in what setting? Thanks, fellas, and may the force of others be with you. May the force of others be with you, Commander Cloud. Ken, this is great. Take it wherever you want. What's your favorite briefing scene? What do you want to be briefed on?
I'll talk about my favorite briefing scene, kick it back to you, and then I'll tell some of my stories of briefings that I've been in that really involve Star Wars. Yeah, so I love the episode 9 one, by the way. Just having rewatched that on TNT in my hotel room. It's got the energy I like. But I got to tell you, for me, it is Hoth. It is Leia saying, you know, you got two Star Destroyers. Ion Cannon's going to fire two shots. Hobby going two fighters gets a Star Destroyer. Oh, that whole scene, I love it. It's a briefing on the go. It's got the energy and intensity of we've got to do this or we're going to die. And I've always loved that one, man.
That's a really, really great one. I mean, that is you're right. That is that's almost like a pre-huddle, you know, before the battle, which a lot of these are, but this is really like, this is exactly what you're going to do. Go do it.
Right. Yeah, the episode one is like that as well. And by the Commander Cloud's so right. I don't think I've ever really stopped and thanked the amount of briefing scenes, but it would make sense that Star Wars would have some briefings.
Well, and it is a legacy of Lucas having a specific attitude toward the way these films are constructed, and he doesn't have anything against an exposition scene to set up. Right. It's like, hey, you want to know what the stakes are? An old man with a beard or a fish or a rebel leader like Leia or Mon Mothma, they are going to tell you explicitly what the heroes are trying to do and what the stakes are.
Yeah. Yeah.
And there's usually going to be like at least one or two doubters. So it's really clear for me. Yeah, I think what I love about Rise of Skywalker is it is a different kind of briefing. It is a, hey, here's our tactics. Here's the plan.
Yeah.
And much like Return of the Jedi, the big picture plan or Naboo, like this group's going to do this. This group's going to do this and then we'll achieve this. But it's also just such a motivational speech, right? It goes from the practical to the just that rousing double general Finn and Poe, you know, contextualizing why they're doing this and it's obviously for the audience, but it's there for this small band of resistance who is fighting so hard and risking so much to keep it alive. That line about, you know, what our mothers and fathers fought for, we will not let die. That always gets me. It's a briefing that turns into just a motivational speech from Friday Night Lights. It's great.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that one's up there for me, but I think my favorite briefing might be Return of the Jedi.
That's hard to turn away from. That's a good one.
Right. There's just so much going on. It is just this absolutely no fear boatload of exposition. Don't care how many screenwriting guides tell you not to do that. Boom, here's a bunch of exposition. Yeah. But then within that, there's just so much going on with characters. It's such a well-done exposition scene because we get where Han is at emotionally, right?
Right.
We really get to see that he's all the way committed. We get the just a great character moments of Mon Mothma and the weight of many Bothans died, and our introduction to our favorite fishman, Admiral Ackbar, one of our favorite fishman. Yeah. Exciting that it is exciting appearance of Crix Maydeen.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's so much going on. And as you've pointed out many times, the fact then that Luke Skywalker makes a big entrance and totally derails the meeting.
Just interrupts.
Just interrupts it.
I guess we're all wrapped up.
For a family reunion. Yeah. I still want a shot of Ackbar going like, oh, okay, well, I guess that's it.
Yeah. All right. Who's this guy? I'm not sure.
Yeah. So I think it's so hard, but Return of the Jedi might edge it out. I also really like in the whole canon of briefing scenes, I like the one that got away, the one that we don't get to see in Revenge of the Sith because Anakin shows up late and Obi-Wan just has to summarize.
I was going to throw that in there. I'm so glad you were on the same wave. Like, yes, it is the best because it is like, Kenobi's like, you missed a briefing. And the whole audience goes, oh, damn, we missed a briefing. We love briefings.
Briefing scenes are one of our favorite. Damn it, Anakin. Yeah. So those are some of our favorites and our whys. But let's get to the real life component of Commander Cloud's question. What is your life experience with briefings? What kind of briefing have you had and what do you want?
Yeah, well, what I want, what I need sometimes is if you travel to me with to Disneyland, since I was a kid, I was the night before, let's get out a map and plan this type of kid, which did not make me the best Disneyland, you know, partner there.
Right.
I'm a little looser in my days, but I still have the, you know, last time Grace and I went, very rainy day right before the pandemic hit, but we had to get to, you know, Star Wars, Galaxy's Edge, all this kind of stuff. But I still have the, hey, look, I get my coffee and muffin here. My lunch is here. Like I try to go be organic and flowing, but I'm sometimes rigid when it comes to Disneyland.
And do you have the doubters who say like two churros against Jungle Cruise?
Two churros before lunch. Yeah. I do have that. And as it, like my, now both my parents, grandparents, have passed, but, they lived for years around the corner from Disneyland. Like literally we'd see the fireworks every night when we'd visit. And so anytime we would go as a kid, we would, hit, a Disneyland hotel, which was a lot smaller and, you know, downtown Disney's there now, but we'd just literally go to the hotel and then I'd get the map and I'd go home and I'd unfurl that map on the floor. And my sister, 4 years younger with me, she didn't know what was going on. I'd be like, all right, we're going to go. I think we hit Tomorrowland first. And we come around here and then, you know, so that's all. I just been in my blood, I guess.
No, I'm right there with you. I like briefings.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So that makes sense because you want to maximize the experience, right?
Yeah. And a little anxiety, you know, I've gotten better over the years of just letting go, but yeah, just also, yeah, I want to hit everything and there's an order and you could conserve energy by going one way versus the other. And, you know, that's why I'm one of those people that have my favorite hot chocolate cart in Disneyland and my favorite, you know, chimichanga cart or something. I have those because I've studied them.
Yeah. No, I mean, my wife and I, the first time we went to Disneyland, and every time we've gone, we have got out the maps. We have plotted routes. You got to be ready. You got to be ready for that. And did you say where you want a briefing? Because it was a great part of Commander Cloud's question of what you want a briefing on.
Well, where? Oh, yeah. We just
like where, who, what do you need a briefing on? If somebody was going to give you a briefing.
For me, I need a briefing every time I'm going to a restaurant I've never been to. talk about another annoying personal habit. I have ordering anxiety. So, often if you know, we're, say we're in Minnesota, downtown Minneapolis or something, Joseph, and we're heading one of your favorite spots. I'm going to let you enter first, get a table. And if it's a walk up, order at a counter, I'm going to let you go first so I could see how to do it. So if you were to give me that briefing before we enter the restaurant, I'd be really, really appreciative.
And this is why we can never go to a restaurant together that neither of us have been to, because that this is literally my answer to.
Is it?
I think there's something, I think you and I, we've talked a lot about like how the initial cantina scene with Luke affected us of that, like anxiety of you're going to go into a place that you this is your first time there.
Yeah.
You know, are you maybe culturally in a place where everybody else there understands it and you don't? So you're going to be so clearly the newbie that you might be threatened by a walrus man.
look, you're not lying. You and I have discussed, you know, Wu Hare's treatment of Luke, and it makes me nervous, maybe nervous as a kid, coupled with a couple years later, I'm watching Pee-wee get yelled at in a biker bar because he's just trying to use the phone. Man, I got to tell you, I was not good in bars for a long time because of that.
Yeah, I think for me, it is a matter of it's a matter of anxiety, but it's also a matter of just clarity. I love clarity because it avoids miscommunications. It avoids hurt feelings. It avoids lost times, all sorts of stuff like that. When I was in college, I took it was a part of my major was rhetoric. But underneath that, it was all these classes about facilitation and communication and just how much clarity can help everybody.
Yeah.
And as I've gotten older, I've had to realize, like, for some people, clarity makes them more nervous, right?
Yeah.
Because for some people's perspective, if you're giving them all these details, it means this must be really complicated and something's going to go wrong. So that's the thing that I've needed to learn, because I like being the briefer. Because I want everybody to feel comfortable. So like for shows in particular, I really like giving detailed briefings, and I would send out like detailed emails because I'm the kind of person like I want to know what's going on. Yeah. And then I had to get to a point where I realized like not everybody wants the whole brief.
Well, look, from personal experience, this is good. I say this in praise of you. When we did the live show at Celebration Chicago, you had a detailed list of, hey, this is what we should do. And I'm a little bit more of, hey, let's jump in and figure it out. But that often has left me in the lurch. And so I remember one time looking on that list, you remember, you were actually, this was like the best time to order our food. And I remember thinking, oh, okay. And then I remember getting there going, yeah, actually, this is the best time to order food. and a comfort over my pre-show anxiety. It just came to me. Like, and so I want your briefings. I will be huddled around a restaurant outside the front door. You going, here's what happens when we go inside.
Excellent. Well, I'm glad that I was able to help a little bit. And you even within the briefing, like happens in battles in Star Wars, you got to improvise too.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And that's for my, you know, my other line of work, where it's like we train and this and that, and you read instruction manuals. It all goes to hell the moment it starts to happen. So, you know, I've been involved in a lot of earthquake training and everything. And the moment the ground starts shaking, you just go to your training, but hopefully, you know, and it's just survival. But the one thing I wanted to say, so because of the old job, the security director job, in 2003, I was part of the security team that helped put together this multi-agency, we're talking upwards nearly 1,000 personnel involved, biological terrorist attack training called Operation Dark Cloud. All right. Big thing. And we were all at the CSUN, Cal State Northridge, like amphitheater for this briefing. Now, I wasn't up there speaking this and that. But because it was multi-agency, you had fire, paramedics, police, school police, campus police, security personnel from us, from the mall. And all of us had on uniforms, but different kind of uniforms, right? So here I am. This is very serious. We got the mayor is there. This and that. And I remember looking out and seeing all the kind of the uniform styles bunched together. And I just remember getting excited because I was like, that's like Y-wing pilots. That's like the A-wing pilots. Oh, and here I am. I was completely lost in my head thinking about Star Wars briefings, which goes back to the original point. George puts them in and they become this tradition. Even Solo has one. I'm Mimban. There's Rogue One. And I just think I go to that as a giddy little kid. So here I am as a supposed adult on this big trading exercise, just going, and they're the A-wing pilots, and I must be a Y-wing pilot.
Yeah, there's so much. Oh man, maybe we should do a deep dive on briefing missions, because there is so much in them. They can be like that very fast, like Leia does. But it sounds like for that, like that was important, right?
Big one.
And yeah. And you need that feeling of we're facing a challenge. We're all in this together, all of us, the real world Y-wing pilots and me.
Yeah, and the lesson of that briefing and could big, it was like a half hour briefing, right? Once the incident happened, it was a live training. So my guys, we had put it together as a scenario, and we were the first, you know, so we played it for, we had a 911 call to make that actually went to a private circuit, and an actual 911 call went out and the event started happening, which was a biological attack inside of a mall, police, fire, paramedics, maintenance, no one listened to each other or communicated. No one listened to the briefing.
Ah, clarity.
And you literally had the fire department sitting there going to handling it. And then the police in one corner with city government officials handling it. And they would come to us and go, hey, what about this? And I'd be like, well, did you ask the fire department? They'd be, well, no, we didn't talk to the fire department yet. Well, they're right there. They're right there. And so I think about that. So I think about Akbar and Mothma and everyone. Like, listen, because then you'll know what's going on.
Yeah, Mon Mothma wouldn't let this crap happen.
She would not. She would not.
Yeah. Yeah, so I guess my final direct answer is, who do I want to give me a briefing on what is... There is a sushi place near my house. I like sushi. I don't have it very often. My wife isn't a huge fan. So I have been meaning for years to go to that sushi place. But I always think but I got to look up online first and remember exactly how to order. And is this restaurant any different? Yeah. And see how it works. So what I would love is to walk down the block and have Admiral Akbar break down how I order at this particular sushi restaurant.
You just can't get the calamari. It's probably relative. Okay.
There's an extra cruelty there. All right. Great question. We could talk about this for a long time, but we're gonna move on to our final question. It is a big one and a good one from our patron on Patreon, Anakin Crespin. Anakin shares, this is so great. Anakin shares some thoughts that lead to a question. So sit back and enjoy. Here's what Anakin has to say. Hello. First of all, I'm a huge fan of you both. You guys are incredibly talented and beautiful souls, and I love hearing you guys talk about Star Wars. Thank you, Anakin. That's very, very kind. Yeah. Anakin continues, my question pertains to the rise of Skywalker. Please keep in mind, I love each movie in the sequel trilogy with all of my heart and am not criticizing the film by any means. The Rise of Skywalker, in particular, which I connect with on such an emotional level, having cried nearly 4 or 5 times throughout the movie, is the one that I struggle with the most. A reason being the way the ending sort of, to some, diminishes the prophecy of the Chosen One being fulfilled in Return of the Jedi. While some believe Luke to be the Chosen One who would bring balance to the Force, such as Obi-Wan, in real life, George Lucas always insisted that it was, in fact, Anakin Skywalker. Other than in Return of the Jedi, George even seems to confirm this in-universe in the Mortis arc of the Clone Wars. In The Rise of Skywalker, Anakin speaks the line to Rey about restoring the balance of the Force as he once did, and while I appreciate the acknowledgement from JJ, the fact that Anakin or even Luke had very little to do with defeating Palpatine in the Sith Eternal in the end leaves me feeling a bit perplexed. I'm not saying Anakin is the only one who can save the universe or anything like that, and I realize why Lucasfilm may have chosen not to have him or Luke intervene as Force ghosts on Exegol and take away from Rey's journey, but did Anakin actually fulfill the prophecy, or perhaps Ben and Rey defeating the Sith in Anakin or Luke's place fulfilled the prophecy due to them being Skywalkers by extension? Come to think of it, Sidious actually mentions Leia when he says that the Princess of Alderaan has disrupted his plans, which we know plays a crucial role in defeating Palpatine, and she is a Skywalker as well. But still, it's all pretty vague and up for different interpretations. So how do the two of you interpret the prophecy? And do you think it was fulfilled in Return of the Jedi by Anakin or in The Rise of Skywalker by somebody else or both? These are all great thoughts, honest thoughts, and I think presented really well. Let's dive into this, Ken. What are your thoughts on the prophecy? Was it fulfilled by Anakin? Was it fulfilled again? Would you feel anything was undermined? All that great stuff.
Yeah. And first of all, I want to acknowledge too what you just said too, of Anakin, doing a wonderful posing this question in this very modern way of trying to acknowledge all aspects of it, trying to say, no, I do love it. I do love it, because in this us versus them social media world, it's too easy to feel like you're slagging on something you love. And that's not the case here, Anakin. I think you're asking some wonderful questions about a film that moves you, because it moves me too. And I understand this one. And Joseph, I always joke, I sometimes go to the simple spot, but I think this, for me, what does work is the idea that Anakin did bring balance to the Force, and the prophecy can be completely, you know, misinterpreted. Obi-Wan had his point of view on it. That also maybe he was right, and maybe the Jedi in story were wrong. We know what George says. I think you can kind of put that on the shelf when you're having this conversation about what's going on in the story. So for me, Anakin did bring balance. There was nothing about the prophecy that said, and then that's it. And then the story goes, and we're all celebrating, and the Ewoks are dancing forever. Now there's reality, and Anakin's addressing that, and it's weird to address Anakin and then also to be talking about Anakin. Anakin, our wonderful listener here, does point out a truth that you and I have also talked about. Sometimes the answer is, George didn't think he'd make episode 7 ever. So we are making it, and so therefore we have to extend the story. But George, I'd be curious to see how George dealt with this question in his own 789. That's something we might never know, but he was going to have to deal with it somehow too.
Yeah, I mean, I think, there are so many different places to go with this. If I ever get back to doing Star Wars counseling, I want to do a Star Wars counseling episode about this, because it's one that comes up a lot for people wrestling with this the way Anakin, our listener, is. Yeah. Yeah, I think for me, my general take on how I interpret it in the galaxy of Star Wars is that Anakin, together with Luke, depending on your point of view, absolutely fulfilled the prophecy of restoring balance.
Right.
We as viewers know that he restored the balance in particular by ending Palpatine's reign of terror and extinguishing the darkness in himself, right? Choosing, making a better choice at the end of his life.
Right.
And I think the key thing for me is always the prophecy isn't, in my mind, he will kill Palpatine.
Right.
It's that he will bring balance back to the Force. And the existence of the dark side is balance, right? We've talked about this this interpretation of the balance of the Force a lot, that darkness and anger and pain, these things exist, and when the Force gets out of balance is when a Sith actively create much more pain and anguish than would exist. And this is documented in Star Wars storytelling everywhere, how much Palpatine not only creates violence in the Clone Wars, but it creates poverty and food shortages and suspicion and fear, and then only escalates that with the Empire, and that is what's throwing the galaxy out of balance, and that is what Anakin, the Jedi Knight, puts to a stop by defeating Palpatine and by stopping himself, right? I don't think Anakin would have fulfilled the prophecy if he pulled a Kylo in The Last Jedi, killed Palpatine, threw him down the shaft, and then it was like, yeah, no, I'm going to find a way to live, and I'm going to do what I always claimed. I'm going to take over the Empire, right? It's that he stopped what the Empire is doing, the pain that the Sith and the Empire are spreading to the entire galaxy, by stopping Palpatine and by breaking the cycle in himself. Mm-hmm. So I kind of feel like that's what my interpretation of, that's what happened, and he fulfilled the prophecy of restoring the balance. The prophecy to me isn't restore the balance forever, because that's not the nature of life, the nature of the galaxy. The nature of Star Wars storytelling right now is that, you know, you fight to keep things as good as they can be. And then naturally, the dark side is going to, you know, anger and fear is going to get into people's soul, and they're going to push and try again. To spread that pain to others, and it's going to be the next generation's or your older self's responsibility to go, we restored the balance once, we restored the balance over here, now we got to do it again, or we got to do it over there. And so I feel like that's just kind of a part of what the Star Wars storytelling is now.
Wonderful points in there, and how I think there is, and not saying that Anakin, our listener, is doing this and I'm not saying it in a negative way, just by I think sometimes this idea of balance and the defeat of Palpatine is definitely something that's conflated, right? Like you said, it's like it's two things, and the prophecy did not say, all Sheev shall be cut down by the one. It's just so it is ongoing. And then I think because Palpatine returns, and people have, strong opinions about that either way, and how that seems, I understand the idea of like, well, we already did this. We killed it. Like, does that mean that the victory in six was nothing? And it's like, no, that was it. It wasn't nothing. Lor San Tekka talks about balance being there. And then that we need balance with the Jedi. And then Luke talks about, for a while there was balance. It was there. And it's just, if it wasn't Palpatine, it would be someone else. And already the First Order and Kylo Ren and Snoke all kind of tied into Palpatine. I think you're right. The cycle will continue. And if we get a 10, 9, 11, boom, it's dark side would be someone else is going to be there to push the dark side further. So it's an ongoing thing that I think it's hard to maybe separate from the name Palpatine, but it's it should be, I guess, from my point of view.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah. For me, I kind of look at it as what is really, really necessary is to defeat the actions, not necessarily the person.
The person.
Yeah, so a couple other thoughts I wanted to share real quick is like, I think it's just always good to keep in mind that we have a choice of how we look at storytelling, how we analyze it, right? We can analyze it, including the real world of what did the creators intend? You know, what interview did Rian Johnson do, or J.J. Abrams, or Chris Terrio, or which two possibly conflicting quotes can you find decades apart from the creator, George Lucas? Sometimes absolutely in sync, sometimes kind of, hey, I changed my mind. Here's the thing. Yeah. We can look at it in that way. We can also just look at the text, right? Mm-hmm. And in the text, it's made clear in the sequels, Luke says in The Last Jedi, and for a long time, there was balance. Anakin the Jedi, as Anakin, our listener says, does say, restore the balance as I did, Rey. So if you want to trust the text, I think Luke and the Force spirit of Anakin are kind of reliable sources.
Yeah.
If you're just listening to the text. So I really take it as Anakin had this amazing victory that Anakin and, aided by Luke's compassion, aided by Leia and all the individual rebels' choice, they did buy many years of a galaxy where, she wasn't dead, but the Sith were not actively spreading pain and suffering on the scale that Palpatine did for decades, right?
Yeah.
Sheev is hanging on a claw arm, neutralized, and slowly that impact is growing via the First Order, and the galaxy is falling out of balance again based on his actions as the First Order spreads out and impacts the rest of the galaxy. And you got a Lor San Tekka going, the balance isn't possible because the darkness is just going to sweep in, and the Jedi exist to hold the darkness in balance.
Yeah.
So for me, I think my big thing is I absolutely see that I don't think it undermines Anakin's victory at all, because I think Anakin's victory is personal as well as galactic. You know, he overcame his own darkness. He saved what he loved, Luke and Leia, theoretically. And he wasn't focused on destroying what he hated. He wasn't killing Palpatine to, so that he could take over the power. He was eliminating the threat, right?
Yeah.
And he successfully did that for years. So I think it's a personal victory for Anakin. And we shouldn't overlook that. Mm. And then it is a victory for the galaxy, because there isn't as much pain and suffering actively being perpetrated.
Yeah. Yeah. Though we're looking at you, Moff Gideon. No, absolutely right. I think, and again, it's, I love discussing it. I don't see it as a critique. Right. And I don't think our Anakin here, our little Anakin, I don't think he's being, it's something you want to think about. It's something you want to ruminate on. And one for me is, I talk often about the complete victory that Leia leads everyone to now, even though she passes during this story. I think it's because it's a victory of the people versus just not justice if it was a small accomplishment. But the victory in episode six is one that's very a military had to be formed. An army had to be formed. A rebellion had to be formed. And they had leaders and this and that. And they had to maybe free the people. Right. And then once they free the people, this evil still exists. And now the people must rise up and help topple it. And that's this complete victory I get inspired by in Rise of Skywalker. But a lot of that is because, you know, they continued the story. Episode 6, we thought it was all wrapped up. Well, now mourning is broken and the story goes on. And I think the storytellers have a responsibility to how do you correctly extend that and get to the point when episode 9, it's more of a complete victory for Leia. And for me, I'm always going to say they did it right. They did it right. They rolled up their sleeves and they figured out how to do it versus just some other evil emerges in the galaxy and we get to redo it all again. I think it's very thoughtful. It's very philosophical, everything we're talking about.
I think so, too. And one of the reasons I like Rise of Skywalker is there's just like a lot of images that to me reinforce this concept that, you know, Lucas himself has espoused this, and you can find videos of him saying that idea, like, yeah, no, it's the Force goes out of balance when the Sith spread pain and destruction, and they're greedy and they want everything. And those are the images in Rise of Skywalker, right? The way Palpatine's lightning is shooting up, destroying all the ships, and it's Rey standing that literally is the you know, block between that hate and the rest of the galaxy. The fact that he has been there in hiding, the First Order's been out there causing pain, Kylo and Snoke and Gideon and all the other people, you know, doing his will are slowly growing this dark side pain. But then he's got this new fleet that's bigger than anything. Every ship is, you know, a gun pointed at the galaxy. You know, he's talking about, you know, fear and pain in his messages. And what's literally physically at stake is all of that pain and anger is going to flood out into the galaxy. Yeah. And the galaxy comes to Exegol and goes, no, you're not going to literally flood out over the galaxy.
Yeah, not going to do it. Not going to do it.
Yeah. I think kind of finalish thought here for me, Ken, is I was trying to put this in personal terms for myself, right? Mm. And I was kind of thinking about it on like a personal level, right? If I almost got hit by a bus and somebody pushed me out of the way, and then I lived for 35 years with all the ups and downs of life, and then I almost got hit by a bus again, I would not be upset or think it wasn't a victory that somebody pushed me out of the way of a bus 35 years ago, right?
I'm glad you've been pushed out of the way of buses, sir. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, I like that. I like that a lot.
Okay. I think it's just because we can be so focused on mm-hmm. you know, the story. I think it is just important. I guess for me, it is very resonant that the story of Star Wars has reflected. We're always going to need to be vigilant to make sure that pain and cruelty and anger don't spread, because it's a cycle, right? It's so easy to give in to our impulses and let that spread. And if that can be contained in a specific way for a while, every moment where we don't have accelerating pain and anger is great, and we should be grateful for everyone. And then it's not restore the balance forever. It's restore the balance, try to keep the balance, restore the balance again, you know?
Yeah. Without the Jedi, the galaxy will be pushed in front of buses.
I don't think you can sum it up any better than that.
No. And look, I say it again. I love exploring this. These are wonderful questions to have. And I think sometimes even I can be, you get on guard in this age of social media where these kind of discussions at a bar, you get your tensions, you know, or a picnic. If you don't want to always go to a bar like me, Joseph and Kenobi, you can sometimes, you just get pre-defensive, right? Of like, no. And I think Anakin did a great job of explaining everything about this going in. But yeah, and I think it's wonderful to discuss. And as always, it's okay to ask yourself, why? Why is that thing there in Star Wars? And let me engage with it.
Yeah, and look at it from different filters. Look at it from the perspective of like, yes, we have access to the creators and they have quotes. And look at it from, hey, if this was being studied 500 years from now, we lost all those quotes and all you have is the story.
Yeah.
Just what is the story and what is the story telling you and who in the story do you trust? And like all those things, I think, are valid in different ways to look at it and analyze it. And I think you said it so well, Ken, that it can be easy to get into. Are you team like it? Team didn't like it.
Yeah.
And it's so much fun to just be able to discuss it openly and honestly.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Well done. All right. So that is it for our questions. Thank you, Anakin. Thank you, Commander Cloud, and R2-D2 playing bass.
Thank you. We are out of here for today. Thank you all for listening. If you're relatively new to the show, thanks for coming on in here. We can be found on Twitter at Force Center Pod. We are on Instagram and YouTube as well. Now, we want to point out, because of our switch to Acast as our podcast host site, we are automatically kind of integrated into YouTube, which means audio versions of our podcast are up on YouTube. I know a lot of people ask about video. Yeah, we'll throw some videos up there of our faces on other things, maybe from time to time again, maybe something's up there. But this is just an easy, it flows so nice, and workflow is a big thing when you're an independent creator. So if you want to take your podcast that way, we are now on YouTube in full. Facebook page is Force Center Podcast. Podcast is available on a lot of different spots, including Acast, iHeartRadio, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, Spotify, Amazon Music, and more on the way. Trying to get to SoundCloud real soon, too, as well, and other places. Merch is available at tpublic.com/user/ForceCenter. And you can go to patreon.com/ForceCenter if you'd like to support us. For personal plugs and donations, you can follow me at Ken Napsok. And I just read a note from, like, I was Ron Burgundy on my teleprompter. It's been a day. You can follow me at Ken Napsok. Go to my website, Ken Napsok. We always talk about donations, is what the note meant, of places, charities you can plug in. And I got to tell you, because my morning was a little hectic, I was going to try to find some for what's going on in Kentucky with the deadly tornado. So I failed to do that homework right now because I'm going to look at it. I would like to focus all of you, if that's something you're interested in supporting the people out there who've lost their lives in this record-setting, especially for December, record-setting tragic tornado. Mm. Focus on that out there if you want. And going forward, I'll make sure to have the direct links as well.
That sounds very, very good. I think definitely I support that as well, to help people out in whatever is the best way possible. As we head toward the new year, there is going to be new campaigns for a service that I really like called Vote Forward. Their website is votefwd.org. They have a lot of research and science backing it up, that personal encouragement to use your power and vote works. So what this service is it is a letter that you add a personal note to about why you vote, why you care. And then you send it out and encourages people to vote and hopefully increases turnout so everyone's voices can be heard in the system that we have. So I highly support that. Vote Forward, votefwd.org. For my personal stuff, you can find me on Twitter, Instagram, TikTok is at Joseph Scrimshaw, and you can check out all my other comedy and life adventures on my website at josephscrimshaw.com.
Yeah, and you know, Joseph, I did find something specific. I want to shout out our friends at the Bombad Cast, Scotty and Jerry had us on their charity stream recently. They tweet out something by the governor of Kentucky. You can go to teamwkyrelieffund.ky.gov. Hashtag is Together KY, and that seems to be a good spot for donations. It's always during these times you got to watch for scams and this and that. That's the governor himself, and shout out to the Bombad Cast for tweeting that out, making it easier for me to find. Thank you.
Yeah, and thanks again to them for having us on their great show a couple weeks back.
Absolutely. All right, my friends, big episode, a lot of things discussed. So thank you all for tuning in and hanging out with us here on Force Center. That is it for this week. So for the omelets and the frozen pizza race and all the crazy characters in Star Wars, we'll see you next time here on Force Center.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape.
And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
So, Robert, tell the people, what's a pretendian?
It's just what it sounds like, Angel, a pretend Indian.
Someone who fakes being one of us?
Someone who impersonates a native.
We're talking about real scammers and con artists.
There are pretendians teaching at universities, pretendians running governments, pretendians in Hollywood.
On our new podcast, Pretendians, we'll tell you the incredible story of these jaw-dropping frauds.
Who are they? Why do they do it? And how the heck do they keep getting away with it?
Listen to Pretendians on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.